of them are settled with their supper now and ready to pay attention to their immortal parts. I was going to ask you to all come up in a semicircle, but I think it's already there's enough now. So I'll stand up, but you don't mind if I lean once in a while. In our outline of the course, some of you may just be joining the class. There's a subject outline sheet, which some of the friends have. If you don't have one, you can perhaps share one with your neighbor or get a copy from someone afterwards. And we've been passing through now a number of weeks reading extracts from the writings about the immortality of the soul. And we started off with explanations about the human spirit and everlasting life. And that had to do with the purpose of existence and the relationship of the soul and the body and themes of that sort. Then we had some discussion about the meaning of symbology related to immortality as found in past scriptures, an understanding of death as the process of death, and something about the hereafter, the passage to the next life, the moment of death, and the nature of the invisible realm, what we have in the writings, and generally what we can hear about the spiritual world. And now we're dealing with section 6, which has to do with the condition of the departed. And we've discussed the fact that the soul's individuality is retained. It's no way lost when it goes to the next world. It doesn't become less conscious, it becomes more conscious. That the true believers have a very exalted station in the next world, that the relatives of believers benefit from the fact that they're related to those who have recognized the manifestation of God. We had a little about those who have not heard about the faith before they die and how they have an opportunity to hear as they enter the next world. Something about veiled souls and something about souls who die accidentally or killed unjustly, or children who die very early in their lives. And Abdul Baha explains that there are many details related to their treatment, and that if we understood it, we would wish that we had died young or in an accident or something of the sort. There's a lot of recompenses in that sense. I think we've had a few statements about suicide along the way. You perhaps recall that a pilgrim note that I mentioned, that someone was here in the early 50s and Shoghi Effendi was, they mentioned about suicide, and Shoghi Effendi said, suicide is like arriving at a banquet uninvited. Seems like a very apt description. Besides all the more serious implications of it, you just wouldn't feel very comfortable arriving at a party that you weren't invited to, you know. Your time will come, your invitation will be ready eventually. Spiritual form, the soul takes on a form suitable to its existence in each of the worlds of God, that we should not identify form only with material substance. It can also be constructed of spiritual substance. And one of the proofs of that is how clearly we see things in dreams. In dreams we see bodies and we see mountains and we see oceans and we see all kinds of things. And yet our physical eye is shut, and all of the senses that would naturally perceive those things in an outer physical manner are not operating. And Baha'u'llah said he's left this as a sign of the existence of the soul in human reality, that people couldn't deny the existence of the soul. So it becomes clear to us that we can have very intense, real experiences independent of our bodies. And this obviously is in a sense a sign of the kind of experiences that we will have after death. But they will be much more intense and much more beautiful, and they will be endowed with a special reality. Now, we come to the section, awareness of this world. We earlier had a section where we discussed the degree to which man in this life might know something about the other world and attain to some understanding of it. And this is very limited. From here to there is a very subtle thing. Abdu'l-Baha says that one can perceive the fragrances of that realm with a pure, detached soul. One can feel close to their loved ones. Not necessarily that you're going to have certainly not the kind of things that happen in seances where you hear voices and get instructions on the Ouija board or something like that. That's a different kind of connection that Abdu'l-Baha says has to do with this world rather than the next world. But just the feeling of warmth, just the feeling of love that you might receive if you were with a dear one or close relative or a parent in this world, you feel them close, and you feel moved to pray for them, as perhaps they're praying for you at that moment. So what then is the awareness of this world from that world? We have a few quotations on this subject here. So this is from Prayers and Meditations. Baha'u'llah says, "And when thy promise came to pass and the set time was fulfilled, thou didst lift to an imperceptible degree the veil of concealment, and lo, all the inmates of the kingdoms of thy revelation and of thy creation shook and trembled, except those who were created by thee through the fire of thy love and the breath of thine eagerness and the water of thy loving kindness and the clay of thy grace. These are they who are glorified by the concourse on high and the denizens of the cities of eternity." So now we find that one of the occupations of those on the other side is to glorify those souls that have been spiritually reborn, so to speak, in this world. Obviously, they must observe them if they're going to glorify them. "O ye rich ones of the earth, flee not from the face of the poor that lieth in the dust, nay rather befriend him, and suffer him to recount the tale of the woes which God's inscrutable decree hath caused him to be afflicted. By the righteousness of God, while ye consort with him, the concourse on high will be looking upon you, will be interceding for you, will be extolling your names and glorifying your action." Now just think in your own life how sometime if somebody takes a little trouble to ask you how you are and listens to you tell about little problems you've had or big problems you've had or whatever they just showers that little kindness on you, how much it means. Now here's Baha'u'llah saying that we should do this with the poor, particularly with those who have suffered disadvantages. Now, in the pioneer field and travel teaching field, you'll find lots of opportunities to do that because you mix with all levels of the population. And this attitude of loving kindness, of sympathy towards others, he says, is applauded by the concourse on high. And they pray for us and intercede on our behalf if we do such things. So you feel supported, the people you're speaking with, and are also encouraged. A very beautiful human action. Now, Baha'u'llah speaking to one of the enemies who had engaged in persecutions and so on, says, "Thus hath thy soul prompted thee, and thou art truly one of the heedless. Thine act hath consumed the hearts of the concourse on high, and those of such as circle round the cause of God, the Lord of the worlds. The soul of the chaste one, Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad, melted by reason of thy cruelty, and the inmates of paradise wept sore in that blessed spot," which gives you an idea that they're watching and engaged in understanding and indeed pained by the proceedings of the enemies of the cause in this world. Epistle, page 81. This is a some verses attributed to the Bab, which is supposed to be found in Amelia Collins' prayer book. It was published in From Copper to Gold, page 107. We read it, it's interesting in its content, but remember that it's a pilgrim note, perhaps of a pilgrim note. Death does not separate the soul of the believer from his scene of previous activity, but only increases his powers. All those who work for this great cause will continue to do so, whether they are in the body or out of it. If martyred, they will attach to those who can best secure their influence, and the power of these will be doubled or quadrupled by the dynamic assistance of those who have already left the scenes of outward action. In a tablet this time, Abdu'l-Bahá says, an observant traveler passing along a way will certainly recall his discoveries to mind unless some accident befall him and efface the memory. Likewise, thou wilt not forget the life that thou hast had in the material world. This is a promise of the Master in a tablet. In another tablet, thy beloved mother ascended to the apex of the kingdom. She is the associate and the companion of the spiritual ones. They witness this world and the inhabitants thereof. For the veil is rent asunder and the covering is taken away from before the insight. Beg of God for them the exaltation of spiritual degrees. Words of Abdu'l-Bahá appearing in the Fortnightly Review, which is an English periodical, in the month of April 1912. Abdu'l-Bahá was interviewed. Abdu'l-Bahá was asked whether we thought those on the other side were able to see what happened to those they love still on earth. He replied, they see all as it affects the spirit. A great joy, a great sorrow, a sin or a great deed, all these things darken or cloud the soul or cause it to rise into greater light. So they see every earthly event that touches you, for good or ill, reflected in your soul. That is the meaning of angels who rejoice over one sinner who repents. Very interesting quotation. You see these things the way they are reflected in your soul. So now if you have your loved ones, your grandparents, your parents, watching you, and they're aware of the state of your spirit. It's becoming mist and shrouded and darkened, or if it's exulting in light, reflecting the bounties of Baha'u'llah, they observe these things. Another talk of Abdu'l-Bahá here in the Holy Land. He says, hence the inferior degree is entirely out of touch with the superior degree. But the upper can look down upon the lower and help it. That is why when we live in this world, we are not informed of the existence of the spiritual world. But the dwellers of the world of spirit know about us and can assist and help us. The beautiful promises of the Master here. One of the pilgrims asked Abdu'l-Bahá, can our friends see us from the spiritual world? Abdu'l-Bahá answered, of course they can see us and know everything we are doing, for that is the world of real sight and sense. Again, pilgrim asked, do the dead pass entirely away from the earth, losing all consciousness of and interest in the people and affairs of the world? No, Abdu'l-Bahá said, the dead retain both interest in and remembrance of those they love. The evolution of the soul after death, the passage in the Gleanings on page 156 regarding the evolution of the soul after death clearly proves that the soul, after its separation from the body, keeps its individuality and its consciousness, both in relation to other souls and to the human beings in the world. In a letter, Shoghi Effendi, written on Shoghi Effendi's behalf, he says, man can certainly recall past experiences in his evolution. And even when his soul leaves this world, it will still remember the past. And again, in another letter, and now concerning your question as to whether man can recall experiences prior to the present state of his evolution in this world, he certainly cannot have any recollection, and the experiences he can remember are confined solely to those through which he has passed in the post-embryonic or earthly stage of his existence. So much for some of the groups that think they're exploring their prenatal experiences, and because they got bumped here or their mother danced the tango, this they had this trauma and that thing happened to them, and they go on with a lot of this, you know, there's a whole lot of things going on. But here Shoghi Effendi seems to be saying, sorry, there's no remembering of these things at all, post-embryonic or earthly stage of his existence. Never mind about the ones that were the Queen of Sheba and other things in past lives. That's another subject. Now we come to the section. Well, do you want to talk about this one? Now tell us some. What can we say about these things? We don't know, you know. It's not exactly a topic for tremendous conversation. But we do see that we're being watched. I think that's one thing. It's interesting. Interesting observation that we're being watched. As far as being all alone, doing whatever we want to do, we never are. That, of course, Baha'u'llah says he sees everything. God says he sees everything. Abdu'l-Baha says he sees everything. So that's an encouragement somehow to keep a bright and friendly face and not complain too bitterly and realize that we can be the cause of the rejoicing of our loved ones and of the friends and of the concourse on high if we do what we're supposed to do. How many times in Shoghi Effendi in his messages he says, you know, he extols some community, some high activity, some achievement of some goal. And then he adds on to it that the concourse on high applaud you from their retreats of glory. So he has the concourse looking down and they come to assist, they want to see that their work is effective. Now, of course, if we're open channels in our activities and our teaching and so on, we are promised that we will attract the confirmations of the concourse. We remember in the classes we studied about concourse, in one sense, is the spirit of Baha'u'llah. Because, of course, those souls that are a part of that concourse are those that have conformed themselves wholly to the will of God. They become instruments of his will. So there isn't two wills operating. You're not getting assistance from some source independent of Baha'u'llah, and yet somehow this confirmation, this bounty, is mediated through those heavenly souls. And Baha'u'llah affirms that the arts and sciences are affected by detached souls in the other world. They are actually the source of the inspiration for arts and sciences. They are, what does he say, the leaven of the arts and sciences in this world. So then there's a whole set of beings that are involved in that. Other ones that are involved in confirming teaching work. Or maybe they're the same ones, I don't know. Now, we have the means of advancement in the hereafter. Does anybody want to ask anything or say anything? Yes, please. No. You may have a thought or a question that just will suit somebody else in the room. And you think, oh, well, I don't want to say that here. But it might be useful. Anything? I don't think that this is limited in that sense to just to Baha'is, but maybe the way they would perceive it would be different. maybe the degree of their insight if they weren't souls that had evolved spiritually and developed spiritually. They might see things in different terms. I don't know how that is. But Advaita's evil souls, for example, are not connected with this world at all after death. And then he talks about those souls that haven't awakened spiritually yet, having an existence which is really like nothingness, like a mineral existence in the next world. And that they have some feeling and experience within an environment of their own, which would tend to think that their world is really an unreal world. But it's very hard for us to judge, to know where souls who have been in this life and passed on, where they are really situated. We pray for our loved ones, you know, like relatives who aren't Baha'is. Maybe they've recognized the manifestation. Maybe they have advanced. We just don't know, really. Do you know of any quotes that tell us? I don't. Besides these, I don't know. Any other thoughts? Means of advancement in the other world. We have four topics here. Bounty and grace of God, intercession, the influence of prayer, the role of free will, and charities and good works. Let's see by reading these what we can understand about this topic. Thus it is established. This is from some answered questions of the Master. Now, some answered questions, you know, is table talks of Abdu'l-Bahá. But these have been worked over by Abdu'l-Bahá. He's taken the manuscript of the Persian manuscript of the talks that were taken down at the same time as an English translation was given to Laura Barney whenever she needed it. She knew some Persian and she was following it. Then he, in his own hand, has corrected some answered questions. He's written in extra lines, he's corrected things. So it has for us the same authenticity as revealed text. And this is why it is such an important book of the cause. And indeed, Shoghi Effendi says that the two books that we need as teachers of the faith to master the essentials of the Baha'i teachings are the Kitab-e-Gan and Some Answered Questions. And they interrelate at a number of levels. Thus it is established that this movement is necessary to existence, which is either growing or declining. Now, as the spirit continues to exist after death, it necessarily progresses or declines. And in the other world, to cease to progress is the same as to decline. But it never leaves its own condition in which it continues to develop. For example, the reality of the spirit of Peter, however far it may progress, will not reach to the condition of the reality of Christ. It progresses only in its own environment. Well, obviously there we have this difference between a manifestation of God and a soul who is dependent on the manifestation of God. So it isn't as if we grow up to become a manifestation and later on beyond that. There are some doctrines where they said we'll become like God. I think the Mormons teach this, that the soul moves and progresses and Jesus is ahead of us, but we'll catch up to where he is, but then by that time he will be much farther evolved. And it will be, he will always remain ahead of us, but that everybody's moving along the same line. This is not the Baha'i teaching. The Baha'i teaching is that the human kingdom, that of servitude, is one condition. There are high exalted stations in the perfection of servitude, Abdu'l-Bahá being in the top rank. And then there's another world, the world of the manifestations of God. And there, within those, there's certain differences from an outer point of view, but inwardly they're all said to be one as well. Abdu'l-Bahá says that the prosperity of children in this world and the kingdom depends upon the good pleasure of parents, and without this they will be in manifest loss. The prosperity in this world and the kingdom depends upon the good pleasure of parents, of one's parents. That is, that they should be pleased with us. And without this, these children will be in manifest loss. whether this world or also in this world, we should have good relations with our parents. And I think Muhammad has said in one of the traditional sayings, he says, paradise is under the foot of your mother. If she doesn't lift it for you there, you're not going to see it, you know. Now, this is in a time when we're rebellious with our parents, and increasingly, you can see that there's a tremendous importance in becoming a Baha'i, as being a Baha'i, to treat with respect and honor our parents. And this is pleasing to God. We're talking about means of advancement in the hereafter. Parental good pleasure is one of the means of advancement. I don't know what you do when you have non-Baha'i parents that are upset that you're Baha'is. That's a good question. You pray for them. Hope that they will eventually become pleased. As they become adorned with the mantle of forgiveness on entering the next world because one of their offspring is a Baha'i, perhaps that will soften their hearts. The Master is asked in some answered questions, through what means will the spirit of man, that is to say the rational soul, after departing from this mortal world, make progress? The answer is, the progress of man's spirit in the divine world, after the severance of its connection with the body of dust, is through the bounty and grace of the Lord alone, or through the intercession and the sincere prayers of other human souls, or through the charities and important good works which are performed in its name. Now, you see all these teaching projects around the world in the names of the Hands of the Cause and members of the House of Justice and the martyrs. That has an influence on their souls in the other world, he's telling us here. Services that are performed in their name. In a tablet, Abdul Baha says, for the kingdom of God is sanctified from time and place. It is another world and another universe. But the holy souls are promised the gift of intercession. You know what intercession means? Interceding, that is, beseeching on behalf of someone else before the throne of God, asking for favors on behalf of other souls. And he speaks about effective intercession. There's a story about Zain al-Muqarrabin. Zain al-Muqarrabin is one of the great scribes of Baha'u'llah. His text, copying of the divine text, is considered the most important of any of the copies, with the exception perhaps of the Master. And Baha'u'llah says that you should go by the copies of the writings in the handwriting of Zain. Zain being short for Zain al-Muqarrabin. Zain al-Muqarrabin. Muqarrabin means the near ones. And this Zain is like the ornament or adornment of the near ones. The jewel of the near ones, so to speak. There is a tablet from Baha'u'llah which says that extols the sanctity of this man. Baha'u'llah writing to him tells him how holy he is, how sanctified he is, and he says, because of this, anything you ask of me for any other soul will be granted. Such a promise he makes to a living soul. But then the trust, he knows who Zain is. He's not going to ask for things that he's not supposed to ask for. Now, presumably Zain retains this power of intercession, but then he says the souls have this power of intercession. But he was given a very high station. You'll see his photograph in Mr. Tarzadeh's book in volume 1, Zain al-Muqarrabin. He looks, has a full white beard and very sparkly eyes. And I've mentioned to you before that he had a good sense of humor, and he used to joke with Baha'u'llah. Now, there were most people couldn't even speak around Baha'u'llah, you know, just completely overwhelmed. He was close to him, and he had this spiritual quality, and he was able to, at this human level, also joke with him. He's the one that this story is told about, the olives that he come to have a visit with Baha'u'llah. Baha'u'llah was having breakfast and he was having some olives and some cheese and some tea. So Baha'u'llah asked him to partake of the breakfast with him. He thanked him very much. He had some tea and he had some cheese. And Baha'u'llah said, "You didn't serve yourself any olives. Have some olives." Thank you very much. If Baha'u'llah was talking about other things, and he said, "You haven't had any olives. Have some olives." And then he said that Baha'u'llah quotes a verse from the Quran in which God is quoted there as saying, "I swear by the fig and the olive." It refers to two mountains, but the mountains are symbolized by the fig and the olive. So Baha'u'llah cites this verse from the Quran to emphasize, to Zain, that the station of olives, you know, you should have some olives. So Zain looks down and he says, "Forgive me, Lord, but he swore by them before he tasted them." In a tablet, "Thy beloved mother ascended to the apex of the kingdom. She is the associate and the companion of the spiritual ones. Beg God for them the exaltation of spiritual degrees." So now, this is the reverse. We're supposed to be praying for them as well. It says, "Be confirmed," that was says, to a Baha'i whose husband had died, "be confirmed with such deeds as to become the cause of his joy and happiness in the other world." So think, our actions here can rejoice the souls of our loved ones in the other world. Now you're all here, your grandfathers, your great-grandfathers are there, and they're all excited because my great-grandson, my great-granddaughter is serving in the world center of the faith, at the heart of the cause. She's cleaning the shrine. She's scrubbing the house of justice. He's working in the gardens, or whatever it is. They're all excited about this, all proud. Remember, I told you the stories that Shoghi Effendi was saying that when Mae Maxwell died, she went around and talking to Baha'u'llah and talking to Abdul Baha and talking to the Bab and explaining her daughter, how wonderful her daughter was, or everything she was doing. She was doing this and she was doing that and she was just so wonderful. And Shoghi Effendi, joking with Hanum, said that if she doesn't stop doing this, they're going to send her back. Another tablet: "The results of thy services thou shalt find in the divine world, the limitless universe of the true one. Their fruits will likewise become apparent ere long in this world." Now, some of the souls have had to work in the dark. I mean, they pour out their lives, they dedicate themselves, and they don't see any results here, or very little results. Some of the knights of Baha'u'llah spent years alone in a remote island or country without any apparent success at all. And their reward is stored up in another kingdom. But also, eventually, there's breakthroughs here. Places like that, the first Baha'i, a single Baha'i, becomes a tremendous event. First in a closed society, for example, who breaks with the tradition. Some of these first Greek Cypriot Baha'is are real heroes and heroines. Very tightly knit society in Cyprus. Other places around the world, we have some conditions like this too, where to become a Baha'i is literally to be ostracized from the society entirely. And the first one that does it is a brave soul, a very brave soul. So, the effects and results of your services are stored up in the divine world. Now, that would mean, you know, it's like putting money in the bank. If you want to spend it all, if you're saying to yourself, "Well, I'm giving so much to the cause, I don't know why things don't go better for me, and why I don't have more things that I want, and why God doesn't give me the things I ask for when I pray, and so on." Maybe it's a good idea not to spend everything you've got in your savings account, you know. Just leave it there. Let Him decide. Be content with whatever He's ordained for you, and let your services collect their just interest in the other realm, so to speak. O thou omnipotent Lord, in this great dispensation, thou dost accept the intercession of the sons on behalf of their fathers. This is one of the special infinite bestowals of this cycle. Therefore, O thou almighty King, accept the request of thy servant at the threshold of thy singleness, and submerge his father in the ocean of thy graces, because this son is confirmed in the accomplishment of thy services, and is displaying the utmost efforts at all times in the pathway of thy love. Verily, thou art the giver, the forgiver, and the kind. This was a tablet given to a believer to pray for his father. This one is in the prayer book now. Retranslated. The original prayer has the man's name, the father's name in it. It's been removed there, you don't see it. When man departs from this mortal world, this is a tablet again, Vabdubaha. When man departs from this mortal world to the world to come, nothing is of any help to him save the forgiveness of his friends, relatives, and family. Inasmuch as the Lord is merciful to his servants, he will answer their prayers, though it be forgiveness for those souls who have not sought the favor of God. This is a great bounty given especially for this glorious age and wonderful cycle, because the Lord has manifested himself with great power to the people of this new century. A new subject here. And we have some major subjects from God passes from some answered questions here. And as we haven't dealt with these yet, we'll read some of these here. We heard earlier, Peter cannot become Christ. There's a difference in station. All that a Peter can do, is in the condition of servitude to attain endless perfections. For every existing reality is capable of making progress. As the spirit of man, after putting off this material form, has an everlasting life, certainly any existing being is capable of making progress. Therefore, it is permitted to ask for advancement, forgiveness, mercy, beneficence, and blessings for a man after his death, because existence is capable of progression. That is why in the prayers of Baha'u'llah, forgiveness and remission of sins are asked for those who have died. Moreover, as the people in this world are in need of God, they will also need him in the other world. The creatures are always in need, and God is absolutely independent, whether in this world or in the world to come. The wealth of the other world is nearness to God. Consequently, it is certain that those who are near the divine court are allowed to intercede. And this intercession is approved by God. But intercession in the other world is not like intercession in this world. It is another thing, another reality, which cannot be expressed in words. This is from chapter 62 of Some Answered Questions. He says it's another thing, another reality which cannot be expressed in words. That's the only reference I've seen to it. How is intercession? How does one intercede? The souls in the other world, how do they intercede for us before God? And he tells us there's no ways to explain it. This is chapter 63 of Some Answered Questions. the evolution of man in the other world. Know that nothing which exists remains in a state of repose. That is to say, all things are in motion. Everything is either growing or declining. All things are either coming from non-existence into being, or going from existence into non-existence. So this flower, this hyacinth, during a certain period of time was coming from the world of non-existence into being. And now it is going from being into non-existence. This state of motion is said to be essential, that is, natural. It cannot be separated from beings because it is their essential requirement. It is the essential requirement of fire, to burn. Thus it is established that this movement is necessary to existence, which is either growing or declining. Now, as the spirit continues to exist after death, it necessarily progresses or declines. He gives an example. He says, look at this mineral. However far it may evolve, it only evolves in its own condition. You cannot bring the crystal to a state where it can attain to sight. This is impossible. So the moon, which is in the heavens, however far it might evolve, could never become a luminous sun. But in its own condition, it has apogee and perigee. However far the disciples might progress, they could never become Christ. It is true that coal could become a diamond, but both are in the mineral condition, and their component elements are the same. With regard to perfections, he says, man is said to be the greatest representative of God. And he is the book of creation, because all the mysteries of beings exist in him. If he comes under the shadow of the true educator and is rightly trained, he becomes the essence of essences, the light of lights, the spirit of spirits. He becomes the center of the divine appearance, the source of spiritual qualities, the rising place of heavenly lights, and the receptacle of divine inspirations. If he is deprived of this education, he becomes the manifestation of satanic qualities, the sum of animal vices, and the source of all dark conditions. The reason of the mission of the prophets is to educate men, so that this piece of coal may become a diamond, and this fruitless tree may be engrafted and yield the sweetest and most delicious fruits. When a man reaches the noblest state in the world of humanity, then he can make further progress in the conditions of perfection, but not in state, for such states are limited, but the divine perfections are endless. Both before and after putting off this material form, there is progress in perfection, but not in state. So beings are consummated in perfect man. There is no other being higher than a perfect man. But man, when he has reached this state, can still make progress in perfection, but not in state, because there is no higher state than that of a perfect man to which he can transfer himself. He only progresses in the state of humanity, for the human perfections are infinite. Thus, however learned a man may be, we can imagine one more learned. Hence, as the perfections of humanity are endless, man can also make progress in perfections after leaving this world. question. If one refuses the cause of Baha'u'llah during his lifetime, may he hear of it after death? Abdu'l Baha says, yes, he will hear of it in his next life, but through the mercy of God, not through his own ability. Question. Are we able through love and faith to make those on the other side hear of the cause who had not heard of it here? Abdu'l Baha, yes. Surely sincere prayer always has its effect, and it has a great influence in the other world. We are never cut off from those who are there. The real and genuine influence is not in this world, but in the other. This was in a discourse in Paris in 1911. Finally, words of Abdu'l Baha to a pilgrim sighted in Star of the West. One can pray for the dead, and by so doing, their spiritual condition will become better. These last are notes of Ethel Rosenberg. Teachings given by Abdu'l Baha in 1904 to Ethel Rosenberg, who was one of the early British believers. Abdu'l Baha said that through the mercy of God, not through his justice, the condition of those who have died in sin and unbelief can be changed. We are commanded to pray that their condition may be changed. As we have the power to pray for these souls here, so we have the same power in the afterlife, in the kingdom. The power of this prayer of intercession is a special teaching of this religion. To pray for the dead was not given as a special religious command of any prophet until this day of the blessed perfection. The grace of effective intercession is one of the perfections belonging to perfect and advanced souls, as well as to the manifestations of God. Jesus Christ had the power of interceding for the forgiveness of his enemies when on earth, and certainly has this power now. Abdu'l Baha never mentions the name of a dead person without saying, "May God forgive him," or words to that effect. Followers of the prophets have also this power of praying for the forgiveness of souls. Therefore, we may not think that any souls are condemned to a stationary condition of suffering or loss arising from absolute ignorance of God. The power of effective intercession for them always exists. All the people in the other world, are they not the creatures of God? Therefore, they can progress in the other world. As they can also receive light by supplicating here, so they can also receive light by supplicating there. One of the means of advancement is prayer by the individual soul itself, for itself. The rich in the other world can help the poor, as the rich can help the poor here. In every world, all are the creatures of God. They are always dependent on him. They are not independent and can never be so. While they are needful of God, the more they supplicate, the richer they become. What is their merchandise, their wealth? In the other world, what is help and assistance? It is intercession. Undeveloped souls must gain progress at first through the supplications of the spiritually rich. Afterwards, they can progress through their own supplications. The Star of the West, Volume 2, page 318, 319. So the same thing again. Questions asked in Ramla, in Egypt, to Abdu'l Baha in May 1911. Is individuality retained by the various individual consciousnesses? Abdu'l Baha, complete individuality belongs only to the station of the Prophet. Those who follow him are under the shadow of his station. After death, man does not develop through conscious effort, but through the power of divine bounty or unfoldment. All good works, loving memories, prayers, and help from lesser beings assist the soul to push forward after death. May thou ever be in a prayerful attitude. In all the worlds of existence, there is nothing more important than prayer. In a letter published in Dawn of a New Day, Shoghi Effendi says, "The intercession spoken of by Baha'u'llah in one of his prayers, which you have quoted, is a purely spiritual act and is applicable to Muhammad as well as to all prophets. This passage, however, refers more particularly to that kind of intercession in which Muslims believe, though the manner and circumstances of it, according to Baha'i belief, are mysterious and unknowable." Then Shoghi Effendi to Canada says, "No one of the galaxy of Baha'i, of immortal heroes now gathered to the glory of Baha'u'llah can contemplate with greater delight the advances which this community has made or intercede on its behalf than she, Mae Maxwell, who has won the peerless title of the mother of that community, the initial phase of whose career was signalized by the founding of the mother community in the European continent, and the conclusion of which was crowned by a death cementing the spiritual bonds now indissolubly uniting the North and South American continents." Now, the House alluded to this, the reality of this, in its message, which you just received for the conference in Buenos Aires about Mae Maxwell. I hope you all noticed there was praise of the Latin American friends serving at the World Center and who have served at the World Center. Here's a further explanation with regard to the influence that our being Baha'is has on our relatives. Shoghi Effendi, through his secretary, says, "We cannot take the teaching that if a believer remains steadfast till the end of his life, he will be the means of the spiritual awakening of all," underlined, "his ancestors," too literally, especially as it is reported and not in an authenticated form. However, we can be assured that the true and faithful believer is in a much better position to intercede for his ancestors and aid in their development than if he were not spiritually enlightened. As to the advisability of praying for the departed for 40 days after their passing, this is entirely an originally Muslim practice and constitutes in no way an obligation on any believer. To pray for the dead is very beneficial and helpful and is always a source of comfort and satisfaction. But there is no reason why it should be confined to a definite period of 40 days. You know, some of the friends of the East have memorial meetings after 40 days and so on. We don't have anything in the teachings requiring us to have such things. The believers are free to do so, but we should realize it's not a Baha'i teaching. And some of them will have a memorial meeting for departed loved ones after a year, but one could really have it at any time if you wanted, gathering friends to pray for the loved ones who have passed on. "We believe that God's mercy exceeds his justice, and through the repentance of a soul and the prayers and supplications of other souls and the goodness of God, even a person who has passed away in great spiritual darkness can be forgiven, educated spiritually in the next world, and progress." That's very reassuring. In a letter, he says, "The Master has told us that gifts and good deeds done in memory of those who have passed on are most helpful to the development of their souls in the realms beyond." Concerning Thornton Chase, Abdu'l-Bahá said, "As many times as possible, at least once a year, you should make it a point to visit his tomb, for his spirit will be exhilarated through the loyalty of the friends, and in the world of God will it be happy. The friends of God must be kind to one another, whether it be in life or after death. The blessed perfection has invited him to his kingdom. At this very moment, he is submerged in the sea of his bounty. Just Abu Bakr was in California when Thornton Chase passed away, and he went to visit his resting place himself, and he kissed the tomb of Thornton Chase, who was the first designated as the first believer of the West. But this idea that visiting the resting places of these noble souls lifts them, lifts their spirits, and so on. Yes. Well, you try to have your actions conform to what the requirements of the writings are as best you can, I think. And remember that the prince of all goodly deeds is teaching of the cause. It's the traveling and teaching and serving the cause. So this is one area we don't always think of teaching as a goodly deed, but it's really the best of deeds, you know, because it has eternal benefits for the souls that we share the writings with or in some way uplift. He feels sure this offering expended in the memory of your dear ones will rejoice their spirits and aid them to progress in the world beyond. Now, this is another thing. Financial offerings to the fund in the name of souls who have passed away has a benefit, spiritual benefit, on them in the other world, as ordained in the writings. Please.
Mm-hmm.
If they hadn't been a Baha'i?
Yeah.
Yes. Sure, because you're giving them money, but you're asking that they get the benefit. And the House for the Justice issues receipts, you know, that this money has been given in loving memory of such and such a person or soul. And that brings us to the end of this section. Activities in the other world will be next week's spiritual menu. What do the souls do in the next world themselves? We've had some hints from all of this, but there's a few other quotations on that subject. Baha. That child is your trust within the charge of God. She was a child when she went, but you shall find her full grown in the kingdom of God. You shall find her mature. You shall not find her there as a child. You shall find her perfect and mature. As to the horse once belonging to your son of which she spoke, horse in the dream means a wish. It shows that your daughter has fulfilled her wish and her desire, and that shows the loftiness of her station. The wish is one in which your son shared, but she attained to it. It is my hope, God willing, that he too will attain to it. Surprise was expressed that a child of only 9 months could have a wish, and Abdul Baha said, "The child was born with a wish." Mrs. And the name is not here, Mrs. Whatever the lady's name was crying, and Abdul Baha continued, "Do not cry. Be happy because you saw her, and you saw her perfected. You must be happy. She is your trust with God. You have not lost her out of your hands. The only difference is this, that you gave her as a trust to God as a child. but you will take her back as a full-grown person. I had a son who was 4 years old, and when he died, I did not at all change my attitude. I gave my son to God as a trust, and so, at his death, I did not grieve. And the lady said, but there is a difference. You gave your son to God, but God takes ours. Abdu'l-Bahá replied, it is the same thing. In both cases, it is a trust of God. Abdu'l-Bahá said, the cause of her surprise is this, that you are crying. Your daughter would say, I have a good mother. She must be happy. Why does she cry? I'm surprised. The cause of her surprise is the thought that you do not recognize her. She belongs to a realm in which everything becomes mature, and she expected you to see her in the state of perfection in which she manifested herself to you. But the fact that you looked at her in this way and that now you are crying is proof of your not having recognized her. For had you recognized her in the dream, you would not be crying now. Relative to the comment of the lady that she tried to put the child out of her thoughts, Abdu'l-Bahá said, it is not in man's control when to forget one. It is not good for one to try to forget them. One must always remember them. Star of the West, Volume 9, Issue 9, page 102. Children of unbelievers and infidels who die before the age of responsibility are not punished because they are under the favor of God. Regarding the In Memoriam section of Baha'i News, although suicide is so strongly condemned in the teachings, it does not mean that a person has ceased to be a Baha'i because he killed himself. He should therefore be mentioned the same as other believers in this section. It's a letter from Choghi Effendi. Repeated 3 times from different sources. Let's see if we can get through. I don't know how long this section is. Let's take the section on spiritual form. Very interesting to contemplate this. Baha'u'lláh says in one of his tablets, that when the soul attaineth the presence of God, it will assume the form that best befitteth its immortality and is worthy of its celestial habitation. Abdu'l-Bahá says, the answer to the third question is this, that in the other world the human reality doth not assume a physical form, rather doth it take on a heavenly form made up of elements of that heavenly realm. Doth not assume a physical form, rather doth it take on a heavenly form made up of elements of that heavenly realm. So it would seem to imply we have physical elements and we have spiritual elements. That world is a mirror of this world. Things in this world are mirrors of realities in higher realms. They have different significances at those levels, but there are parallels and counterparts from what we've been reading. When the souls leave the bodies, they do not assume elemental bodies. Whatever man thinks regarding this is but his own imagination. This is in a tablet to Mrs. Cooper, Ella Cooper. The spirit results from the union of the body and the soul, then the spirit becomes immortal, always remaining with the soul and forming for it after death a sort of ethereal body. And finally, a tablet of the Master, he says, you will retain your individuality and will not be swallowed up in one vast spirit. Concerning the condition of the human soul after its ascension from the material world, the essence of the human soul is clarified from material substances and purified from the embodiment of physical things. It is exclusively luminous. It has no body. It is a dazzling pencil of light. It is a celestial orb of brightness. That is surely the most specific definition I've ever heard in the tablets of the condition of the soul in the other world. This is in Star of the West. It's a tablet, again, to Mr. Helbury of Tacoma, cited in Star of the West, volume 14, page 2. Now, next week we will be taking up the question of the awareness. We'll have to save that for the next class. The awareness of those souls in that world of the likes of us in this world, and then about the means of advancement in the hereafter, which we've discussed at different times, the bounty and grace of God, intercession, the influence of prayer, the role of free will, charities, good works, charitable deeds, and so on. That's within the one of infants and babes and those who it's the same thing in a car accident. I mean, they're not held responsible, so I think that all of accidental deaths of all sorts would. Won't go into those details.